Welcome back, everybody. We are talking with John B. Wells from Caravan to Midnight about all things between heaven and earth, really, and where things are going, where we're actually heading at this point. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about where you want to take the caravan, John, and what some of the topics are now that you feel that you can actually speak more candidly about on your own program and not being inhibited by censorship of big media and everything else. Are there some other more interesting, like high bigger topics out there right now that you're seeking to get into and expose a bit more than you could previously?
Well, yes, there are. Actually, right now, what I'm trying to do is go back to people I had spoken with before, and some new ones too, who did not have to suffer through those endless commercial breaks. I mean, where you've got 22 minutes worth of commercials per hour. Or three Jeez, hours.
That's a lot.
Oh, man. You know, it's like, well, on Coast to Coast, for example, program starts at 6 minutes after the hour. So after the first hour, just taking it from the first hour, starts at 6 minutes. So you get a little intro, talk about what we're going to have. Come on, maybe do some news stories or something. And then you'll take a floating break between 6 minutes after and 29. So somewhere in the middle there, you'll need to take 2 minutes. Then you'll come back with, I don't know, maybe as much as a minute of music. Well, so that's 6 plus 3, and now you're out at 29, so that's 10 minutes there. Then from 29 until 34, so there's another 5 minutes, so there's 15. And then you'll have a minute of music, there's 16. And then you'll have 2 more minutes of commercials. You know, and it's like, wow. And by the time you, I mean, it can be done. And I get it. That's how they pay their bills. That's how they pay their people. I get it.
Yep.
I really do. But it does tend to break the train of thought when somebody is trying to make a point. And maybe it's a quite profound point. And it's like, sorry, the computer's going to cut us off. You have to wait. And then by the time you get back to it, you know, you sort of lost the juice. So
yeah.
I want to recover some old ground. And, you know, you and I experienced that together on the air. But you know, you're quick, so you picked it right up, and you were so interesting that I was taking notes because I wanted to be sure that we picked it up where we left off, and I thought it went really well. but I want to make sure and get everything out of those people who had come on before that they had to offer, everything that they wanted to say, and all the time, new people with new information are contacting us now, which is just excellent. So. I think we're on the verge of full disclosure on this UFO thing. It's absolutely completely real. It's out of the comic book deal permanently now, mm-hmm. the comic book realm. But you notice nobody really even paid that much attention to the Washington, D.C. flap, they called it, in 1952. I mean, Washington, D.C. was swarmed with flying saucers. Well, the population didn't lose its mind. I guess once was enough with Orson Welles and his War of the Worlds.
Right.
But you know, even then he was saying, hey, listen, there's space people that are here, but unfortunately they're blowing stuff up and they're killing people. So, they, you know, that was a little bit different spin. But these people were just kind of showing up. And then there's this this wonderful young cat named Wilbur Allen. He's got a website called UFO DC. And he says, listen, I'm 7 blocks away, and I'm telling you, these things are going to the White House. And then I heard a report recently from somebody in Texas who said this gigantic craft was headed right for the Crawford Ranch. That's where it was going. Hmm. And then you go, and then you talk, you hear these stories about did Dwight Eisenhower really meet with ETs during his administration? Yep, 3 times. Well, did they really make a deal with the aliens? I don't know. Yeah, maybe. So I want to explore that. You know, I just don't really care that much about conspiracy theory, unless it's a really interesting one. But conspiracy theories are boring. But when you get a glimpse at a real conspiracy, now that's the juice for me. So I would rather go with real conspiracies than these conspiracy theories. And Dr. Judy Wood, when she was talking about, I'll tell you what, I just love her. I really do. She is so brilliant. She is positively sexy in her brilliance. Plus, she's as cute as she can be, got a bubbly personality, but she is a thorough and dedicated scientist. She is trained. And whenever we would talk about this, what happened on 9/11, her book is Where Did the Towers Go? And you go, okay, well, that's a title. But it's like that title belies what she really means, even though she states clearly in her title what she really means. And that is that there was not a pile of 110 stories of rubble at the bottom. When you see these videos of the building supposedly collapsing, that doesn't even look like a collapse anymore. She spoke to us in a way that was, we were able to see past what we thought we were seeing. As Dr. Miller likes to say, if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't have seen it. Right. Well, when you see this and then you go, you know, that was a gigantic dust cloud. It covered almost the entirety of New York City. And again, there was not this huge pile of rubble at the bottom. So where did the towers go? And I said, are you talking about discorporation? She goes, well, I call it disassociation, but I like yours. And I said, well, I think I got it from Heinlein. But remember that Stranger in a Strange Land, where the character in there was thinking about discorporating, meaning suiciding himself.
Right.
But anyway, but I asked her, what was in that dust? And her response was, everything was in the dust. Chocolate, bread, dirt, steel, plastic, everything was in it. Wow. And she said it was directed energy. She never said directed energy weapon. She just said it was directed. Directed energy, meaning it was, if you'll excuse the expression, instructed to do something and pointed at something. So it was sort of a dual direction, if you will. And just to be able to not interrupt her and just let her roll with her story was really quite rewarding. And I know I want to do that with the other people that I've had the privilege of speaking with, and just let them roll with it and just don't interrupt. And we can take our breaks whenever we want. And as soon as you're done, we'll take one, but only to stretch our legs for a minute and freshen up these teas.
Yeah, I think a 3-hour show turns into about an hour and a half or something like that when you're kind of said and done, and that's going to be broken up and everything else. But it's kind of what you said. It's of course, they need a methodology to fund the operation. But I think it's based on an old model, actually. There is a more intelligent way of doing it these days. And I think that all the bigger media companies as well are like struggling to get into that. And it's been really interesting to see that you can instead provide a more interesting service, really, by going back to the grassroots level of things again, when people are, you know, ingenuity and technology at your advantage. And I mean, look at how many, you know, podcast shows and, you know, radio shows that are out there now on the web providing all this information, and the majority are a lot is for free, and some, you know, have subscriptions like we, you know, do and stuff like that. But it's like, that's where it's at. You know, it's really interesting. And you can give, as you said, you can give the uncensored version, the uncut version. And that's really what people want to hear. That's what they tune into, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And in, you know, it's really interesting. I need to research this because I continue to mention it, and I have been a poor steward of what I have held on to by not being able to credit the man with by name as to what he said. He was a genius advertising guy who developed a commercial for Anacin pain reliever, and it was the most obnoxious commercial you ever saw. It had a spring going back and forth, and I think a lightning bolt, you know, in another little window there, and then a hammer beating on something in another. It's like, if you got a headache that these symbols would describe, you need Anacin. He said, Anacin, Anacin. I think he said something like, I don't know, 20 some odd times in a 30-second spot. He tripled their sales. And he said, buy your wife that mink stole that she wants. Get the car that you really want. Buy the house of your dreams. Get yourself so hopelessly into debt you never imagined you could be in that position, because you will realize levels of productivity you never imagined were possible. And I think people really snagged onto that. And so, as in the same way that civilization is supposed to serve the people, you give up a little bit of freedom for the benefits of all the people's efforts. But after a while, It's almost like, I can't remember who said this, maybe it was Asimov, everything seeks a higher level of disorder in the universe. Almost like coiling up a rope and tossing into them. It's all neat when you put it in the trunk of your car, but after you've driven around a little bit, the thing's all tangled up and you can't understand, how did this thing get tied in knots like this?
Right.
And that's kind of what happened. The civilization ceases to serve the people, and the people wind up serving the civilization.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with radio. You start off serving the people, but after that, it's like, we can monetize this. So why don't we give them less content and more commercials? We will make more money. I mean, for a while there, let's pick on Clear Channel some more. They abandoned this eventually because it was just horrible. It was unlistenable. You could not listen to more than one song on what they call the classic rock stations now without a promo, a commercial, some kind of promotional element. Not they would play one song and then here would come a rasher of commercial content, whatever it was promoting, something. And I was like, is this really necessary? And they kept doing it. And the playlists are like 50 songs. Like, wait a minute, I just heard Rock and Roll Band by Boston an hour and a half ago. It just became ridiculous. So they've pulled away from that, and now they're starting to infuse the programming with more songs. But that's what happens. The moment that something can be monetized, the quality going down the drain is soon to follow.
Yeah, and also the direction, the kind of a steering idea behind it of where, you know, why are we doing this? What's the point of it? What's the purpose? Right? Otherwise, it's like the sole purpose of it is to just generate more money, and then you that's why all these companies are so bankrupt creativity-wise and ideas too. They need to go to their consumers and, you know, please give us a slogan and we'll give you, you know, 10 packs of gum for free or whatever. It's that perpetual kind of state that they don't really know where they're going. You know, that's why I think the bigger they grow, some of these companies and the fusions with other, you know, multinational companies and stuff like that, they become so large that they don't have a direction anymore and don't have any purpose. That's why I always like the smaller guy, you know, they're like the local mom and pop stores and play, you know, stuff like that, right? That's what it's all about. That's where quality comes through in most cases anyway, as opposed to these other, you know, huge monopolies that we have working in the world now. And in the direction we're going, by the way, too, is when I squeeze that in there, that the perception that, you know, the way that the world is moving politically right now, we're only going to get more of that. We're moving more towards the corporate state and away from, you know, the small mom and pops, the independent people, the middle class, if you will, and it's going to turn into a completely different scenario than I think that people usually think about. And again, I always go back to the example of Sweden as a repetitive kind of mantra, and telling that to people as well, that if you begin to move in that direction of you know, super high taxes, more government, just a huge governmental system that oversees everything all the time, these smaller guys are not going to be able to make it. They're going to go out the window. They won't be able to pay all the fees and the tariffs and the regulations and the checkups and everything else that's demanded of them in such a system. So that's going to destroy ingenuity. It's going to destroy the little guys. So if people are really concerned about that, look somewhere else. You know, look towards what's wrong with the free market, right? I mean, America has had that for many, many years. It made it one of the more successful countries on the planet. You know, what was wrong with it, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. And if the little guy is squashed anymore, you have a choice. For whatever reason, these big corporations, these big news organizations, these big networks and so forth, they still have this cachet that people think is just wonderful. I don't know how this happens, but I'm getting an idea of how it happens. And it just goes back to all that Marshall McLuhan stuff from back in the late 60s and early 70s. It's that's really what we need to do. We need to let's take your what's the name of that outfit? It's something Foods, Part Foods. No, I think it's Whole Foods. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because someone says, here, this product is organic, does not mean it's GMO free. The corn's gone. The wheat is gone. Well, how do you get around this? You go to dedicated small operations that say, no, absolutely, I would stake my life on this. This is not genetically modified food. We don't sell that much of it. but everything that we do sell is the straight stuff. It is high quality food. It is not genetically modified in any way. That's what you have to do. Yeah. One of the great joys of driving across the country, I did many road trips between Dallas and Los Angeles when I was working out there for about 6 years, was listening to these small radio stations and just the amazing content that that came across these stations. And just, you know, just now you can, of course, get your satellite radio, and that's fun. It's great to be able to, you know, just hear your music uninterrupted, unlike the old 8-track tape player that would inevitably change channels, you know, right in the best part of the song, the quiet part. You know, now you have to go fishing around. Where can I pick it up? But there was a certain intrigue, and it was quite fun to just go, oh, I'm losing them. Let me see if I can pick them up. Yeah, I can get one. Okay, we're heading toward Winslow or whatever. Yeah, we'll be able to pick up this station out of Tucson, I think, something. And you'd hear all this Native American music and just stuff that was just enriching, and it just opened up a whole world. Well, you know, if everybody's on satellite radio, then everybody's getting the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And the flip side of that evil coin is that with digital transmission, Bob Smith down here at that end of the street may not be getting the same news even that Tom Smith or Tom Jones over here at the other end of the neighborhood is getting. I mean, they can actually dial in the content that they want. The propaganda is what I really mean to say in these various communities. I mean, it is feasible that you could actually pit different neighborhoods in a large city against each other just by little subliminal things, little auto suggestions that are dropped in news that is different on this side of town from that side of town.
Yeah.
That's the real danger. I mean, I'm looking at this thing right now on Jones's InfoWars site. It's written by Aiden Salazar. Study, : cereal box characters manipulate children by looking into their eyes. Cap'n Crunch, the Trix Rabbit, and Count Chocula are colluding against your children. And it's true. You know?
Right.
it's all about monetizing things as if, I mean, it's that golden calf thing that Moses got all ticked off about when he came down off the mountain. It really is. Now people say, oh, well, as you keep making these biblical references, it's like, I challenge anybody to answer this question. Who could possibly write something like this, make this stuff up thousands of years ago, if it was not for want of any other description, divinely inspired? These people had an insight into the human psyche and human nature that has yet to be equaled, let alone surpassed. And it's the same thing over and over again. The moment that golden calf becomes the thing that you worship, meaning the big pile of money, you're done, you know. And as a good old country guy that was a lead machinist at a well-known aerospace company, he's 80-something years old now, said, John, if a man will steal, he'll kill. And it's true. So,
yeah.
I don't need to mean to moralize overly here, but in the end, this really is spiritual warfare. Makes no difference what particular religion you subscribe to.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Go ahead, John.
Well, that's it. It's like, oh, you keep using this word evil. What is evil? Evil is the deliberate damaging or exploitation to the point of damage of another human being on a physical, mental, or spiritual level. That's what evil is. And it's everywhere. And it is without conscience. And it is without law, and it is without governance, and it is without restraint.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and that's what we as human beings we need to shift our consciousness. And going back to talking with Judy Wood, what happened on 9/11? People will say, "Oh, it changed everything." Well, what most people take that to mean is, "Yeah, the Patriot Act, which is an abomination." All the NSA spying, yes, the war in the Middle East and all this stuff. But there was something else which is actually even more important than that. It changed our consciousness. We were less human, the good part of the human being, after that event and all the propaganda that surrounds it, even to this day, than we were before it happened. It changed our consciousness. And we have to disconnect from this. I don't like just repeating this expression, but it's the one that works. We have to disconnect from this matrix. Right. We have to actually observe. Don't just see. We have to actually listen. Don't just hear. And we need to respect and conform to correct language when we communicate with each other. We say, oh, I have this feeling. I just can't put it into words. Well, that's right, because it's a feeling. But our thoughts are expressed in words. If your vocabulary is limited, so will your thoughts be limited in as much as your ability to communicate them to other people.
Yeah.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking with it, man.
It's a good story. No, I concur. I think it's very important language and the way that, and again, that goes back to the part of the education, again, the deliberate dumbing down of most humans at this stage, and the idea that, you know, the more of the words you take away, the more of the processing of the external reality you take away with that as well. It's kind of bizarre how that works. You think that mankind would be still able to have a rich, you know, inner environment per se, but there seems to be some kind of correlation there, of course, to how you, what you put the words onto and the way that you perceive that and the way that you kind of learn from that. It's a very, very interesting study. And I wanted to shift gears a little bit. We talked just a brief in the break here, John. I wanted to return to that point again, actually, of what you make of Russia right now and Putin, what has been going on there. I think it's been a very curious how we've almost seen a complete switch, shall we say, in the political stance, in the way that Russia now almost represents some kind of conservative force in the world, for a lack of a better expression. But it's gone so tremendously quick. And by no means do I think that it's all said and done when it comes to, the objectives per se of Putin. It seems to be kind of a mystery still to a lot of people as well, trying to figure him out and stuff. I think even the CIA was doing body language interpretations of him to be able to predict his next move and behavior and all kinds of weird stuff like that. But what's your perception of what Russia is and representing right now in the world and Putin?
Well, first of all, the Russians are a brilliant and very, very tough people. They have been through deprivations undreamed of, particularly in this country. Now, Western Europe got a good bit of it over the course of a couple of wars, but architecture, literature, music, art, all of these things, and the ancient language, even that's written in what's effectively the Cyrillic alphabet. A soft chair does not make us more fit. And yeah, we know about Stalin, and we know what he did. We know that it's my understanding he starved Ukraine into submission back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that aside, you know, I think we can agree there's always the wrong people who are killed in every war.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But what I make of Putin is this. He is a young Russian boy. He grows up. He joins military. KGB officer. Field officer, and now he's president. This is a tough guy. Now look at his parents, look at his wife, look at the things that he does. Yeah, I know he grandstands a little bit. He's got a hunting rifle. He just got a bear, or he's swimming, or he's flying a helicopter. He's doing something. But the thing is, contrast him to our president. Vladimir Putin, to me, looks like strength and somebody who, see, I think the chief difference here is that Putin loves his country. He loves Russia. I do not believe President Obama loves this country at all.
Right.
And I don't. I mean, the first thing he did when he became president was go on an apology tour, yeah. You know, bowing to all these people around the world. It's like, look, people don't necessarily agree with this, but it seems to be true. People admire strength. They admire mental strength. They admire physical strength, and they admire artistic strength. And I think Putin did Now, here's the thing. Do you know you can have your assets seized if you are in a position to object to publicly the what is effectively the banker overthrow of Ukraine? It's true. Obama has put into place a law that will allow him and his administration to seize your assets. So, well, nobody wants their assets seized. But if I was in Vlad Putin's position, I think I'd have done exactly the same thing. They were trying to marginalize Russia, and they were trying to isolate Russia, and he's not going to have any of that. Do I think he's trying to put the old Soviet Union back together? Nah, not really. Maybe, but I don't think so. I think what he's trying to do is just hold on to his turf.
But not in the context of the old Soviet empire, right? Because people have questioned his ex-KGB affiliations and where his true allegiance lie, I guess.
Spot on. I think that's exactly correct. Not in the context of the old Soviet Union, a greater Russia, a stronger Russia. Absolutely. That's why he's over there giggling right now. He knows that the U.S. is going to take us on in Eastern Europe. No, they're not going to do anything of the sort. And they control so much oil and gas. It's ridiculous. Did it get anybody's attention at that big refinery in Ukraine just went up in a big explosion?
Oh yeah, I didn't catch that. That's interesting.
Oh man, one of the, I think it is the biggest refinery, and not a mention made of it in mainstream media, apart from just a cursory report, and then it was gone. Biggest oil refinery over there just blew up. I don't mean a fire either. I mean it's like gone. And
wow,
gee, how coincidental is that?
Yeah.
And all, it's just stupid. It's just, it's so stupid. And, you know, to his to the southern border of Russia, he has problems with extremists down there as well. But the way that he deals with it, the way the Russians have dealt with stuff, you remember when that that theater or whatever it was taken over by terrorists?
Was that the South Ossetian little conflict there?
Yeah, it was the one where they just went, that's it. I'm going to have to take them all out. We're not going to put up with this agonizing one death of a citizen after another. Just take them out. In other words, there's going to be huge collateral damage, but we need to send a message.
Oh, Chechens. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took over the theater there. I remember it now.
Yeah. It was terrible. And it was a tragedy, but sometimes it's necessary to cut your arm off to get your hand out of the bear trap.
Right.
Sometimes it's just, you don't want to, but you have to. You have to do it. And I don't know. I think that when you have a weak leader, your country will soon suffer from a critical shortage of intestinal fortitude. And I think that's what's happening here. I mean, we are war weary here. Russia learned their lesson in Afghanistan. They just went, 9 years is enough. Let's get out of here. This is stupid. And how long have we been there now? Let's see, 11 years. And what have we gained? We're almost completely out of Iraq, and you know what's going to happen. It's going to go back to just exactly like it was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Only worse. Could they have taken Saddam Hussein out at any time? Absolutely. All they had to do is blow up one of his seven palaces and go, we're going to keep blowing your stuff up until you abdicate, okay? And that would have been the way to do it. But no, we've got to go in there. Why did we do that? Because there's a lot of money in war. And Putin does not seem to have that mindset at all. I mean, they're not involving themselves in regional conflicts. We're the ones who are doing that. Why are we allowing ourselves to be put in the position of being looked down on as warmongering murderers in undeclared regional conflicts? I mean, the world is looking at us like we're either crazy or criminal or both. I don't want this for us. Can we say the same thing about Russia? No, not at all.
I mean, that was hilarious with the Crimean situation, where I heard European politicians say the same thing. I think Obama did it too. Like, you just don't walk into other countries and detopple their government and take over. It's like, oh yeah, where has that happened before then? You know, it's like, it's just the double standard. I mean, I'm wondering if they actually do they actually not know what they are doing, or they're so myopic in their viewpoint that they just realize that whatever we do, it's 100% right. And if someone else mimics our behavior, we're going to demonize that till the end, you know. It's just amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not even a double standard. That's just flat out hypocrisy.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's highly visible hypocrisy. I think what's happening with the political sector is that they are just struggling with the blowback containment for what is, for the chaos that's being orchestrated by these huge financial cartels, because they're the ones that are running this. I mean, look at Soros. Look what Soros has done. He has spent, for starters, he has spent $80 million since 1994 on trying to get pot legalized in this country.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. Now, why would he do that? And he is trying to embed a socialist agenda all the way down to the local level in these local municipalities. I'll look it up as we're talking here, because there's a name for it. Mm. And people would recognize it, but what they don't understand, because they never hear about it from mainstream media, because mainstream news media is bought and paid for. You are not going, it's going to be programs like yours. It's going to be programs like CTM. That's Caravan to Midnight. Brzezinski himself said that the whole Syrian engagement was averted because of alternative media reporting.
Yeah.
So what does that tell us? Look, let's go to music. For a long time, the electric guitar was pretty much it. I mean, we're listening to stuff. I don't remember listening to stuff from the 20s when I was, you know, we've been listening to Jimi Hendrix songs and Led Zeppelin songs for over 40 years.
Right.
In some cases, mm-hmm. Nearly 40. Well, I guess it would be 40. It is 40. It's over 40. And I was thinking to myself many years ago, I thought, you know, we need some new instruments. We need some new sounds. Well, along came these wonderful synthesizers and all these different plugins. And now I find electronic music to be some of the most interesting music out there, because there's some new sounds in there. We need some new ideas. I mean, we used to hear all the time on the radio that, oh, as automobile sales and housing starts, automobile sales and housing starts. And I'm going, what are you guys going to do when you've developed everything and the entire country is just one solid megapolis? Everywhere, everything has been developed. What then? We need, so sorry, I'm knocking stuff around, which I always do in studio. I should be forced to wear mittens. We need some new ideas, and those new ideas are going to start with us inside. We're going to have to change the way we think about things, and we're going to have to reject those things that we know are bad for us. We're going to have to examine the difference between we can do this and should we do this? We can do it, but should we? Well, I don't know. Well, I think we should think about it before we do it. I mean, almost like letting off that A-bomb. They were going, wait a minute. Do you think the chain reaction will stop with the uranium, or do you think it could go on and, well, actually envelop all known reality? Well, I don't know. Let me see.
Let's try it.
Let's try it anyway.
Yeah.
And how about that deal about letting off a nuke in space? Do you think it might? I don't know. Let's find out. Push the button. I mean, this is bold, but I think the better word would be reckless. And we have to stop doing that, because this thing is going to turn into the Roman Empire in its last days. And people should keep in mind that it took several hundred years for the Roman Empire to collapse. That was a long slide to the bottom, but it did eventually happen. and it was ugly at the end. It was ugly. I mean, when you've got human beings out there in the arena killing each other for sport, that doesn't look good. and we're almost there.
Yeah.
We're almost there. In fact, I guess a case could be made for it. It's happening now. Look over, what is it? It was in Pakistan, where somebody put up a giant poster of a child's face to remind the drone operators that, you know, please stop referring to these things that you see on your satellite imagery as bug splats. It's not a bug splat. This is a child that you just killed with a drone. Why is no one outraged? I mean, How can you justify spying on all of your citizens and storing all of their phone conversations, and yet your southern border is effectively wide open? How can this be justified?
Yeah.
What would our reaction be if the the Mexican government decided, you know, we've had it with that Sinaloa cartel. We're going to launch a drone strike and just send these drones over the Rio Grande River and blow them up. And, oh, well, we blew up some American school children, too. Oh, well. Warm up another drone because I don't think we got them all. Oh, now, what would our reaction to that be? Oh, and yet, we're completely indifferent to that very thing. Look, a child is a child. It doesn't matter what color. It doesn't matter where in the world. That's a child. That's a man. That's a woman. That's a grandmother. All of those things. Why are we so insensitive to this? Well, we're becoming less insensitive to it because, again, alternative media is credited with stopping American action in Syria. I suspect Vlad Putin going, you better not. You better not. I got a Navy base there. I'm not going to have it. I suspect that was part of it, too. But Brzezinski said alternative media stopped it. So we'll roll with that. Is that the whole story? Is that 100% of the truth of the matter? Probably not. But it is something to think about.
Indeed. I just wonder what level of, so-called terrorists that this type of activity is going to create as well, John. I mean, this is ultimately about if there wasn't such a thing from the get-go as, you know, a Taliban force, Al-Qaeda, and all these things that they've been going after. I mean, as we know, Brzezinski had his fingers in that pot as well. Way back, you know, fighting the Russians in the 70s there. But nonetheless, this is going to create an enticement and an absolutely 100% understandable wrath and rage upon, you know, America in this regard. And I think that, I mean, I always go back to that idea as well, that the people in power, they know damn well what they're doing and for what reasons they do it. There are a couple of other suggestions here, like what you mentioned before with Obama going around bowing to everyone else, kind of apologizing. I think it was D'Souza's documentary, Obama 2016, that kind of showed a little bit of his kind of anti-colonialist mentality, basically, and being a person that basically has a hatred for what America has been and represented in the past. And therefore, now it's like his job to bring it down, to take this down to a level and to create almost a hatred around the world aimed towards America as an effort to destroy it. And I think that's because as you see and formulate the globalist idea of the New World Order and everything comes into place, it's a necessity that you erode the identification of the nation as something positive. And I think that, you know, the patriotic sentiments in America has been so strong for such a long time, but now this is how they're going to break it down, right? With a kind of an immoral behavior, and so that it begins just like the Roman Empire to a certain degree to kind of crumble from the inside, that the belief in what it actually was or represented is being changed and altered. And now people are willfully almost going to resent what it is and also, of course, what it was, which is a very sad ending to a long story.
Yeah, you know what? I failed to mention something a while ago. Do we think that maybe Vladimir Putin wants payback for what we did to their ruble in the 80s and 90s? Collapse the ruble.
Do you think that Putin knows about the Wall Street funding of the Bolshevik Revolution? Do you think that is there such a thing as this is a long stretch perhaps, but to a certain extent, if he is aware of what actually happened and how many millions, hundreds of millions of Russians, well, 60 million at least, were, you know, killed, and that this is some kind of way of turning the wheel back on those who caused this in the beginning? Is there anything like that going on, do you think?
You bet. I mean, I don't know. I'm not friends with Vladimir Putin, and maybe if I were, we could have some of those chats that are not to be, the content is to be understood, but not to be repeated, and certainly not verbatim. But again, the Russians the Russian people are brilliant. They are brilliant people. The things that they do are one of the best examples that I have of the way they think is this. The forward-looking infrared radar that we used in our fighters, there was just one problem with it. If you switched it on somebody, your enemy could tell that you knew you were being looked at, but with because of your receiver. You know, I'm flying along. You're in your plane and I'm in mine. I go, oh, there he is up there. So I'm going to shine this thing on him. But now you know in your airplane, you know that I'm looking at you. So you can pretend that you don't notice, but you do notice. You do know. The Russians came up with this thing called Magic Eye. It's simply a mirror rotating in a glass ball in front of your windscreen. And it would read those signatures, those infrared signatures. And it would inform the pilot that you're being looked at. But the one that was doing the looking had no clue that the one he was looking at knew he was being looked at. That is Russian problem solving. And I mean, that's genius.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're very UFO activity. Absolutely. Positively. That's almost a pedestrian subject now. They're totally aware of it. Over here, it's like, oh, no. It's all, no. That's just nonsense. That's just rubbish. I don't know what's happened over here. I really don't. I think that we have just been caught up in this like tornadic vortex of nonsense for so long that whether it's fact or fiction, it's all the same goo. When fact and fiction become homogenous, there's a problem. And the population is easily manipulated, and that's just how it is. I don't really know where to take it. Look, have you ever talked with a fellow named Douglas Hagman? He's got this thing called Hagman and Hagman.
Oh, yeah, I recognize that. I do. I have not talked with him personally, but I know of it.
This guy dropped. He's a very, very bright man. He and his son run this program. Not only do they suffer things like a distributed denial of service, often, and sometimes quite severe ones, but he dropped a real bombshell on the program last week. He is a certified investigator of many years. This is a rational, highly qualified investigator. There is no woo-woo in this man's makeup whatsoever. He is hardcore researcher and investigator. And the information that he brought forth about Loretta Fuddy, the Hawaiian health director, and Subud, S-U-B-U-D, which was founded in the 20s as sort of a woo-woo spiritualistic connect with your inner self and the higher consciousness and all that. It's actually, it has a subversive aspect to it as well. Even Howard Hughes was concerned about them. When Mr. Hagman finished talking about Loretta Fuddy being the only fatality in that that hard landing, it was just a hard water landing. It was not a crash per se. It was just the engine suffered a catastrophic failure. Oh, really? A Pratt & Whitney turbine engine with a time before overhaul of like 3,600 hours. Those things don't have catastrophic failures. That's like one in a million. Something maybe more like one in 2 million. Mm-hmm. When he finished talking about this, I can state unequivocally that nobody has any idea who Mr. Obama is. They really don't. There are, apparently are six names that can be connected to him. He does not look anything like his birth father is supposed to be. Yep. Barack Obama Sr. He looks very much like Frank Marshall Davis.
That's right.
In fact, if you just punch in Barack Obama, Frank Marshall Davis together images, you'll see he favors Davis.
Yep.
Clearly.
Yep.
His mother, Ann Dunham, little soft porn girl. Nothing real hardcore, but there are images of her all over the internet. You can see her top, you can see her bottom, you can see everything almost. And I'm thinking, why is this okay? Why is this okay? Where is the outrage? Can we imagine? I mean, look at all the furor over George W. Bush having perhaps inhaled some of the Peruvian marching powder, the blow, the toot,
right,
into his nostrils.
Yep.
Oh, you know, you know, he should have been drawn, quartered, and you know, his head set up on somebody's gate, according to his critics. And yet you look at Obama's background and you go, why is all of this okay? Is it guilt over slavery, or is it a carefully coordinated psychological operation to make this person appear as the problem solver of the world?
Yeah.
All of the social problems. And I would also ask another question. What has he done for black people exactly?
Right.
How about nothing?
Yeah.
How about nothing?
Well, and he's half white. I mean, that's just it, right?
Well, yeah. And you know, Morgan Freeman is the only one who has said, no, wait. He is not America's first black president. He is America's first mixed race president.
Yeah.
Freeman's the only one who said it.
Right.
And I like Morgan. He's okay. I mean, he's got his position. And you can't help that there's some bitterness, because that slavery thing hangs over everybody's head. Primarily cast into the sharp relief that it is cast into because of the color difference. The Irish, you talk about slaves, and the Irish practically single-handedly as a people built the entire New York subway system. They are unsurpassed for poetry and music and all kinds of things. Few nations of people have brought as much culture to the world as the Irish. Now, those people were put upon like you wouldn't believe. The Italians too,
mm-hmm.
real bad, and the Jews. That's why all those people formed their mafias and so forth. Is the only way the goal of, except for the occasional random psychopath, and there were a few in there. The idea was, yeah, we have to do this illegally until we get enough financial clout that we can convert to legitimate business, and then maybe we can bury this past. That's what they wanted to do, but the only reason they did it is not because they had this lust for criminal behavior. It's because there was no way to get ahead otherwise, because there was so much prejudice against those groups that they couldn't get ahead, no matter what they did, unless they went criminal. So we are all slaves to something, and that's just the way it is. But to recognize this and to be okay with it, I really think holding on to this, that slavery thing, it was wrong. It was stupid. Nobody thought about afterwards, beforehand, but we have to let it go. As Americans, we have to let it go. We have to let go of our guilt, and black people have to let go of their resentment. We got to hit the reset button and start over. I think it is possible. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody has to say it.
Right.
And no one will say it. But I will, and you will, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's been, I've said this many times now in the last few shows that we've done, but to hold the same moral lens that we hold today against something which occurred, you know, in this regard, several hundred years ago now, in some cases, 100 years ago, is a huge mistake to make. And furthermore, there has been, just as you said, there has been hundreds of different peoples and tribes throughout human history that have been persecuted to the point of annihilation, that have been completely eradicated off the map. There have been this struggle, this battle, and everything else has been a constant throughout human history. And I think that to only view it in such a light that we do today is wrong, you know. And we were lacking that perspective. And I think, again, as you said, if you're not taking a stance that this is some kind of generational guilt that you can supplant onto people. If one takes the biblical route, then that when, you know, you hold the sins of your fathers, you know, on yourself or on your own shoulders, kind of thing. If we don't believe that, then people who are born today, whatever race they're from, shouldn't suffer from whatever their ancestors did to them. Right? You'd think that this would be a really simple issue, but for some reason, it is not.
Well, even more to your point, and even to my point, do we think that keeping this slavery thing alive is beneficial to a certain group by maintaining the division between the races? I think so.
It's being used as a weapon today.
You know, I remember one time I was in LA and I was driving this Lincoln that I had leased. I just wanted a big four-door because I had family and all that, and I needed one. It had Texas tags on it. And this one guy, this black guy, came into this gated area and started asking questions and so forth. And one thing led to another, and he started getting irritated. And he said, yeah, I see you got a Texas license plate on your car there. They just dragged a brother to death down there. And I said, oh, yeah, man. Everybody in Texas drags black people behind pickup trucks to kill them.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we all do it all the time, right? I said, come on, man. He kind of went, well, yeah. I said, listen, we don't have to be cross here. Now, did you say, hey, I'm Joe. Everybody in the neighborhood knows me, and it's okay for me to come in here. I always come and go through stuff and see if there's anything usable. No. Instead, we're on the verge of getting into a brawl. Will you tell me why that's all right? Yeah, man, I get your point. I said, okay, now how can I help you? He goes, well, I'm a little bit short. I said, aren't we all? I said, what can I do for you? He said, $5. I said, you're on, man. And that was the end of it. $5 isn't going to get me very far, but $5 was pretty important to him. I get it. Now, if I give $5 to everybody that I see on the street, I'm going to be the one who winds up needing $5.
That's right.
You know, so you can only go so far with that. But I'll tell you, I believe that we, the people, can say to each other, look, I don't want to hurt you, and I don't want to be hurt by you. So could we just agree that no matter which one of them wins this fight that we can possibly avoid here, whoever wins is still going to know he's been in one. He's going to be stinging and hurting and bleeding and perhaps even crying as a result of that. So could we just not do this, knowing that we could, but should we? And I believe that what would really help us is to call upon, I'm going to have to go back to the Bible. You ready? Forgiveness. And just declare a general amnesty for everybody. And just let it go and reset so that we can concentrate on our real enemy, which is not each other. Our enemy is the unseen ones who foment this discord between us, who make fodder of it for the news stories, who profit from it. Just like Moriarty in this movie I like to reference, The Game of Shadows. A Game of Shadows, the second Sherlock Holmes picture. Moriarty, he wants to control the bullets and the bandages. Those people are the enemy, and they're a very serious enemy. And the thing that makes them as serious an enemy as they are is that they are largely unseen, and they have plenty of buffers between us and them, but they can be revealed. They can be brought to account. They can be tried, they can be convicted, and they can be punished on a level of severity high enough that it'll send a message to others who would do the same thing that they do. Is the game far along and we're way behind? Yes. Can we still win it? You bet. Can we do a come from behind win? You bet. Can we do a Hail Mary, if you'll excuse the expression, and get that football and get that football into the end zone or whatever comparison you want to make? You bet we can. We can. The question is, will we? You know, are we going to hold on to our faith? Because they can't take your faith from you. You have to give that away. Are they going to persuade us to do that, to where we no longer have faith in ourselves, we no longer have faith in each other, we no longer have faith in the great source of life that put us here? We're going to give that away and go with them? The unseen other humans. I don't think that we should, and I don't think that we will. It's just that I think we're going to have to suffer a little bit before we realize that this is not an optional selection. This is not an optional action. This is necessary, or we're simply not going to make it as humankind. We're going to be slaves. The moment that you're afraid to speak out, you are already a slave. I just saw that today on a little website called Full Spectrum Dominance. It's a great little site. I know the guy that runs it. And it's true. If you're afraid to complain about your government, you're already a slave. I think people would do well to remember this.
Absolutely. I think it's a really good point. Self-censorship and the different kinds of weapons being used against people at this time, political correctness to shut people down, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, having a fear of constantly, you know, not being liked or hung out to dry in the media in that regard. People have to be smart, of course, and not play into the tactics and the technique of the social engineers that are seeking to use every issue as a wedge issue and divide us into smaller and smaller groups, fighting, you know, more and more with each other, while at the meantime not looking at the apex of the pyramid, but actually taking it on a very base, small level, you know, and at the same time, as you said, the time strife overall is a time of great opportunity, and perhaps sometimes people have to go through some kind of shock, some kind of experience that actually leads them to giving them the incentive, the boot in the butt, if you will, that actually gets them off their up on their feet a little bit and actually try to achieve something a little bit more better, strive for something different, you know. And that's where I hope we can take this, and that we're not just going to spiral down into a barrage of just smaller conflicts and smaller groups that just play into the hands of where they've sought to actually take us for all this time. So I hope you're right, John. I hope you're right.
You know, I'm really not a gloom and doom guy. I really believe that we're going to be all right, but I think we're going to have to work for it. I think that when people are asked or even forced to think about this, would you prefer to be a kept slave, or would you rather take your chances and see what you can do? Do you really want to risk going all the way through your life and in the final moments of your life look back on it and say, what I could have done if I had only had a little courage? Courage is necessary. It is necessary. And you have to ask yourself a question. If we know that our days are numbered, like the hairs on our heads, and that one day we're going to leave this realm, well, what exactly are you afraid of? If you know this and there's no way out of it, if your life is inextricably linked with your death, what is there to be afraid of? Answer, nothing. There's nothing to be afraid of. Fear is only a paper tiger unless you make it a real one. And then you got trouble.
Good thoughts. I think that's a brilliant way of wrapping things up here for this time, John. This has been another very interesting conversation. Of course, very rich. Always it's great to talk to you, have you on, and just philosophize and, well, shoot the breeze about everything that's going on from both two different perspectives and, of course, across the ponds, as it were. But why don't you give us some of the details again, John? Tell us how we can follow you more regularly, the new website as well, of course, give that out, and anything else new you have upcoming, or anything on the agenda, as it were. Please go ahead, John, and give us those details.
Well, it's just caravantomidnight.com. It is being optimized more by the day for ease of use, and all I can tell you, well, you know what, I really don't, just because of my position with my with the former radio program I was associated with, we don't post the upcoming shows because I want it to be a surprise, particularly to some of those who have joined, so they can see what we're doing. But it's very easily affordable. We want you to be happy. If at any time you're not happy, we will simply give you your money back. But I don't think you're going to do that. And that's all you got to do. The sign up process is easy. You don't have to use PayPal or credit card or any of that. You can send us a check in the mail and we'll get you started. We'll get you started and then wait to see if the check clears, because we assume that it will. We're not worried about that. We want everybody to be happy, and we will talk about things that absolutely positively will not, at least at this time, be broadcast over any mainstream news outlet whatsoever. We will talk about things that are positively dangerous to the establishment, and it's all in furtherance of annoying it and possibly straightening this thing out by removing the criminal element from our government and go back to truth, justice, and the American way, which is truth and justice, equal protection under the law. Absolutely. For example, no progressive groups whatsoever were targeted by the IRS, but the conservative groups were. Well, that's not fair. Oh, yeah, you can use that as a tool if you want, but it's not fair, and it is not just, and it is... It's falsehood made real by action. As Merlin said, it must be truth. When a man lies, he murders some part of the world. That's what we need to restore. Truth. Truth in government. Truth in ourselves. And that's the quest of Caravan to Midnight. If I make a mistake, next time I come back on the program after I've discovered I've made a mistake, I'll own up to it. I am not the oracle. You know, I am not the great kahuna. I am one of you, just as we are all together in this. And that's the only thing to win here is peace, but not the boring peace, the exciting peace. And so I invite everybody to take a look. And some stuff has been some stuff has been put up on YouTube. It wasn't authorized, and you know it goes up and it comes down. But check it out. Look around. You'll see a program here or there. Take a listen, and I think you'll like it. I think you'll find value in it. And if you don't, well, we'll take care of you and just go on about your business. You can go right back to mainstream media. They'll tell you everything's okay, and it's not. We'll tell you the truth.
That's good. That's good. All right. Caravan2midnight.com for more information on all of these things. Thank you for coming on again with us, John B. Wells. Keep up the good work, and I hope we can stay in contact, and we'll chat soon again. Thank you.
Well, and I hope that you'll come on Caravan to Midnight one of these days.
I'd love to. I'd love to. Thank you.
All right. We'll get that going. Thank you very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening today. We'll be back in just a couple of days here. Radio 314 with Robert Guffey is up next. Then we have Catherine Austin Fitz, and also from Norway, Ingunn Sigurdsdottir, to break down the myth that Norway is the best country in the world. We have Robert Morningstar, Zoltan Istvan, and many, many more coming on after that. All right, well, thank you again for your membership, for your support. We do appreciate it. And also my thanks to the Red Ice crew for all their hard work, keeping everything together and keeping us going. We'll be back in just a couple of days. Until then, we say thank you so much for listening. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you soon, okay?